Welcome to the Eclipse Wealth Podcast. This is your guide to making sense of financial planning and wealth management. It's brought to you by Eclipse Private Office and is here to inform, inspire confidence, and spark ideas that help you take control of your financial future. In each episode, we'll explore the key concepts that drive long-term success. Everything from building a strong foundation to making those all-important decisions as your wealth grows. You'll hear from experienced professionals who live and breathe this work every day, and from private investors who'll share what they've learned on a path to financial freedom. Our first series is called The Client Journey. Each episode takes you through a different stage of the financial planning process, helping you see what's ahead and, more importantly, what's possible. So whether you're just getting started or well on your way, there's something here for you. Let's begin the journey.
Hello. In this episode, we open a familiar debate that often divides investors. But first, I've got a question for our listeners. When taking a journey across your local city, do you choose to take the bus or jump into a taxi? The analogy is relevant because we're debating whether it is better to invest via passive index funds or funds that are actively managed. My name's Max Weatherby, and I'm joined by two experienced investment professionals to talk through the complexities that underpin this topic. Oliver Jones is a fund manager with Portfolio Metrics. Portfolio Metrics describe themselves as financial engineers and have won numerous industry awards, including one for best communications from Citywire only last month. So, Oliver, I'm sure they'll be listening to this podcast.
Thanks, Max.
My next guest is the Chief Investment Officer at Peregrine & Black Investment Management, where he chairs the committee that sets the asset allocation policy for the firm's clients in London and Bermuda. He has enjoyed a distinguished career as an equity analyst and portfolio manager at some leading firms in London over 25 years. He is Oliver Pearson-Lund. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hi, Max.
Hi, Max.
What are the chances of having two guests called Oliver? For the purposes of this discussion, Ollie at Portfolio Metrics, you're going to speak with us from the passive corner. And Oliver from Peregrine & Black, you're going to talk from the active corner of the ring for the purpose of this discussion. And Ollie, I'm going to throw the first question over to you, which is, let us start by framing the debate and, in a short sentence, explain what problem does each approach solve for everyday retail investors, in your case, passives?
Thanks, Max, and thanks for having us as well. I'm really looking forward to this.
You're welcome.
Passive is a great tool for investor portfolios. I mean, quite simply, it provides, you know, low-cost exposure, well-diversified, often globally, to the asset classes that clients need to hold in their portfolios. So, yeah, as I said, you know, we just think it's a great tool to have in their portfolios.
Great. Oliver, again, similarly, what problem does active management approach for everyday retail investors?
Thanks, Max. Nice to see you. Nice to see you, Ollie. The active side of investment management has changed over my career, 30 years. And it's certainly, depending on which market you're in, the efficiency of the information flow in that market means there are managers who can beat the index, and that has been proven. So for certain areas of the market, active management is essential.
What do you think the biggest misconception people have about active management?
I think the biggest misconception in the last 5 years has been cost. With obviously the concentration on fees, the total expense ratio, there has been a sort of over-reliance on cheaper is better, whereas actually there's a coming together in some cases of active fees and passive fees. The actual difference between the two can be much closer than clients think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We're going to touch on fees later on in a bit more detail, but I think that's a very valid point. Ollie, I can see you're itching to get in on that point.
It's such a great topic. And actually, one of the things that we talk about quite often at Portfolio Metrics is that there's actually, in our opinion, no such thing really as passive investing at all. You know, if we think very simplistically, even just about the US equity market, when you're choosing to invest passively or via passive funds in that market, you know, you've got a whole range of choices you have to make, you know, NASDAQ, S&P, Russell. These are all very different indices, very different constructions. You know, the S&P index even has a committee that chooses who goes into that index. So to say, think passive investing is a hands-off, very simplistic approach to investing, it's actually not. And you must be aware of the risk exposures you're taking, the sector exposures, the factor exposures. And these are all just in those passive tools that you're using in portfolios.
Yeah, just to pick up on what you're saying now, I mean, passive investing obviously assumes that markets are hard to beat, whereas active management, as Oliver was saying earlier, assumes that skill can add value. Do you disagree with those statements or?
No, it's the honest answer. I think there's elements of truth in both of those. You know, passive investing, if you're a pure passive investor, you know, there is the implicit assumption that you can't outperform the market. I don't think either of us think that there's no space for both in portfolios. There absolutely is.
Yeah.
And as you allude to, there are certain markets that lend themselves better to active management, some areas where it's more successful. But in those, you know, those bigger markets, you know, passive investing very much has a space, and where it is harder, it does make sense to have a larger allocation to that cheap passive beta and just taking that market return throughout the financial plan.
We'll pick up on that because I think that's an important point that it deserves more coverage later on. But Mr. Pearson-Lund, this debate is often framed as a binary argument, but what I'm hearing is that that's not your experience. So what evidence do you seek to decide whether an active fund is adding value after fees? And in a way, how do you make sure the active taxi driver earns his fare?
Yeah, it's a very valid point. In fact, we just had an investment meeting this week looking at the variety of funds on our recommended list. It does run into the hundreds. And, you know, at the end of the day, if we just take the US market, for example, that is an incredibly difficult index. And I'm talking about the S&P here, 500, maybe not the Russell 2000, but that's an incredibly difficult index to beat. Managers have struggled over the years. So there's a good place to use your passive and maybe get that lower fee. And that'll be a big chunk of most investment managers' portfolio anyway. But where you're looking further afield into the more sort of emerging market and Asia regions, you might find managers that can do it. We have found those. And where they have outperformed, it's been very generous for the client. And the fees have not been exuberant either because they've been coming down. So if you can find those nuggets of gold, and it really depends if you've got the resource to do the investment management work to find those nuggets. So it doesn't come easy. It does demand work. But if you're prepared to put the work in as an investment house, you will find them. And then your clients will be all the better for it. And plus, clients do like to see a workload for their fees. And if you can produce active managers that beat the index, then you'll prove your worth and hopefully your fee a little bit better.
Well, he's got a point there, hasn't he? Do you find that portfolio metrics, there are parts of the market where you think active managers have an edge and you will generally always use an active fund?
Absolutely. You know, it's a truism of the different asset classes that we use. One of the, I think, asset classes that's probably best known for that is the high yield bond market. It's incredibly difficult to invest passively well in that market. You've got the lower quality, quite illiquid, sort of like triple C rated debt within that market. It makes it incredibly hard to track and incredibly hard to invest passively, even at a low cost. You know, actually, in some instances, we can get active high yield managers at a lower cost than passive high yield managers. So that's certainly one market where, you know, we do lean into active management. And then the other obvious one is small caps as well. Those areas of the market, even when we're talking the US market, which we've mentioned as being quite efficient already, you know, it's typically less efficient, less analyst coverage. And those are the types of markets we like to spend that active risk budget in and try and get those extra returns above and beyond the index for end investors.
Because it's certainly true, isn't it? If you look through the list, you can buy an ETF in just about anything, all sorts of indexes that don't really exist, so synthetic indexes. So I guess just because there is an index in that field doesn't necessarily mean you should be buying it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. We touched on fees earlier, and I think that's a relevant point to sort of move on to, because it is one that's often quoted, isn't it? And again, staying with you, Ollie, fees sound quite small, don't they? You know, on the whole, 0.25% per annum versus 0.75% or in some cases, 1% per annum for an active fund. I mean, for our audience, explain why do fees matter so much over a long-term period?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Max. The fees you can get now on passive funds is almost quite frightening at times. We can get US equities at 3 basis points nowadays. So, you know, the fees are coming down. But also to Oliver's point earlier, you know, active fees have come down a long way. And You know, it's not unreasonable to get fees below 50 basis points now for active managers. But of course, why fees are so important, I suppose they're the only really known fact that you're getting when you invest into a fund. You know, it is, I suppose, a headwind for performance, and it is a drag on the performance of the underlying investment. So the higher the fee, the more the performance is reduced by. And when you're thinking active funds, I suppose the higher the fee, the higher the hurdle is that the outperformance has to achieve to beat the passive fund. So a 1% fee, you need to outperform by 1% just to keep up with the index. So it's a hurdle that's put on active funds to achieve outperformance.
Yeah, because it does add up over a long period of time. And let's be honest, most clients are going to be investing for a major portion of their life. And over 20 years, it can make a big difference. So Oliver, to come back to your point, because if an active manager is charging more than the passive fund, is it right to expect outperformance? And if so, how much might one expect in terms of what you and I refer to as alpha?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's the net of fees argument. Everything's got to be net of fees. So we've got to look at things on a fair level playing field. And once we get that, I think you're really looking over 1, 3, and 5 years with the same manager. And you have to be confident that he's delivered in those periods. You've also got to understand the style of the manager. And this comes back to your view of the market right now, the value versus growth argument. If your investment management house takes a view on the cycle, on the growth versus value argument, then you may have more of your money in value funds or growth, vice versa. And that just depends on your view as a house. And that might mean that you're looking more at the fund manager against the value part of the market. So you're taking a bet yourself as a house, which area of the market you want to go into. And you might use an active manager just to source that part of the market rather than just to beat the index. So it could be like, if you like a dividend fund in the UK, for example, income funds are very popular because of the dividends they provide. And that's been a key feature of the UK market for a long time. And that's unusual because it's not the same in all markets. So it's horses for courses a little bit with active and different types of markets around the world.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is that fees are relevant, but it's not all about fees. And one needs to look through that to the outperformance or alpha that you wish to achieve. What I'm going to sort of turn to now is to sort of talk a little bit about the market conditions and things like that at that point. Let me start by, Ollie, asking you, in what conditions would you expect a passive strategy to outperform or even underperform?
It's always an interesting concept to think about passive funds out or underperforming, I suppose. They're there, they provide the market.
Yeah, but let's phrase it that way, maybe in which you might wish to own, shall we say.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously you'll provide getting market exposure. And, you know, as we've seen, it can be difficult for active funds to outperform. The way we sort of like to think about it is, you know, there are times that we see where passive funds outperform, and the types of markets you'll see in there is typically when there's quite a lot of momentum in the market, when you've got some strong market leaders leading that index performance, very much like we've seen in the US over the last, I suppose, 10, 15 years now, where a few big names lead the market. And that's a function of, one, the indexes keep increasing the exposure to those names that have been doing well. So they are positive skewed towards those momentum factors in markets. But also, typically, active managers are often a little bit anti-momentum at times. You know, they're often looking for those good opportunities and are sometimes in a little bit early and often get out a little bit early as well. So those real momentum-driven markets by the biggest names in the index, when you're seeing those market conditions, you would expect passive funds to outperform by their very nature.
Oliver, I'm sure you've got something to say on this topic.
Yeah, it's always the adage that we look very closely at funds when you go through an inflection point like we've just been through. And the one last year would have been the Trump tariffs, if you remember that. There was a week or 2 week period where the market's disjointed, and we had to figure out which managers perform well in those periods. And I suppose, in a way, that's the time you really look at your active manager and say, look, did you do what it said on the tin? Did you actually outperform in a falling market? Because that's the holy grail, isn't it? One of the criticisms of passives, obviously, is going to be you're going to go down with the index. And actually, you go down lower because you will naturally underperform by the cost. So you do need to test the active managers on those occasions when things come unstuck. That's where they really earn their extra fee. And we have had a period of prolonged bull markets, and that has helped passives enormously over the last 2 or 3 years.
So to come back to my earlier analogy, there are times when you're going to want to jump into a taxi and not wait for the bus.
That's right.
Absolutely.
When it's pouring with rain on the street and you just want to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly, you know, thinking in terms of what we're all going through at the moment, fairly volatile markets due to the war in the Middle East these past few weeks. You know, thinking back to some of the sort of recent crises, you know, we've all worked through some of these ones going back some way, great financial crash or but more recently, the sort of COVID pandemic. What was the sort of experience, Oliver, for your clients in the firm in terms of the funds that you held for them, particularly the active funds, through those periods?
Yeah, actually, it was probably 08 was our most helpful time to own actives, I would argue, mainly because with the banking crisis, at that time, we were probably majority invested in the UK. It's changed a lot now. It's a lot more global. But those days, it was quite a UK-centric portfolio. And the issue was that 25% of that were in banks. And when the banks collapsed, that would could take your portfolio with it. So we invested in an active manager who I was with a firm I actually ended up working with, who put half his money in cash. And he came to see us about it. And this was about a year or two before the actual crash. And he explained he couldn't get his head around the valuations, et cetera, et cetera. And this has happened one time before for me, which was the dot-com crisis of 2000. And, you know, at those times, you sort of do listen to the manager. You say, right, you don't understand the valuations and you're a banking analyst originally. So now is probably the time I'll put our money with you rather than invest directly in the banks. And you can come to conclusion when you're ready to go back in. And that actually saved us an awful lot of money and a lot of heartache because we avoided the crash for clients. And that was a tremendous moment for our business. But, you know, suffice to say, it hasn't really happened since. But that was probably the most telling point I can remember using actives.
Ollie, any insights from portfolio metrics over those periods?
It's really interesting because, as you sort of say, you know, these moments of market stress that we have, that is really where you hope your active managers are there for you to help soften the blow, I suppose, that comes through. Because as Oliver mentioned, you know, in your passive funds, you take what the market gives you, and that's, you know, the drawdowns and the subsequent market rises that come with it. What we always find, I suppose, quite interesting about these stress events is it really tests the risk management processes that the active managers have. I suppose one thing that often happens is, in active funds, you get buildup of factor exposures, buildup of sector exposures, and these sort of market corrections, if you like, a real test to those risk management processes. You know, we saw in COVID, funds with a big value exposure really got hit quite hard because they were overexposed to those areas of the market that felt the pandemic hardest. And similarly in 2022, again, when we had that inflation growth, that inflationary scare, again, those managers that were overexposed to interest rates, overexposed to growth companies, or even small caps in that market, they really felt the pain as well. And it's those risks that are really important. And it's those market events that I suppose really show up what risks are being managed and what risks aren't being managed.
I remember the great financial crash myself as a portfolio manager at that time. And I had a client who had an execution only account on the side, and he went and tried to catch a falling knife, buying some banks, and it took him, I don't know if he ever got his money back, but there we are. That's another story. Let's move on a little bit to a topic I must say I increasingly find fascinating, which is sort of investor psychology. And back in episode 5, I hope you both had a chance to listen to it, but certainly our listeners hopefully will have been through that. In episode 5, we talked about the importance of being invested over time. And isn't the biggest risk that investors face sometimes their own behavior? Ollie, I know Portfolio Metrics have some interesting thoughts on this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the things I think we talk about the most, and it's almost our guiding light when putting portfolios together. This very well researched area of, you know, behavioral economics, prospect theory, in client thinking, and that notion that, you know, we feel losses a lot more acutely than we feel equivalent gains. And as a result of that, you know, behavior is incredibly important. And as you mentioned, that plays out in the investor journey as they move through their financial plan. And when you're building portfolios, you know, you have to be cognizant of the behaviors, the natural behaviors that we all have as people. And that's what, you know, really leans into this active passive debate that we're here having as well. And that if you're not picking your active managers well, if you're not spending your active risk budget well, you can accentuate the boom and bust, I suppose, of the journey, that out and under performance. And in doing so, you're just, you know, feeding that natural behavior, that tendency to want to sell out when it's not great and then buy more at the top. So ultimately, you know, we really believe if we can smooth that investor journey out, if we can ultimately help advisors manage the behavioral aspects of the financial plan, you know, we think we're as responsible as the advisor for keeping clients invested, and we should build portfolios for all environments to help with that.
On that point, I know you're not responsible for underlying client relationships, but I'm interested to know within your firm, is there any evidence that a passive approach helps clients to stay the course, or is that not a thing?
It's interesting to think about whether it helps them stay the course. It's not, I don't think it's necessarily whether passive helps stay the course or not. I think that's more on the active side, as we've sort of mentioned, you know, you can utilize those active funds to help smooth those out. But at the same time, if you're selecting bad active funds, if you're selecting not good active funds that are adding unrewarded active risks to your portfolio, you certainly risk the financial plan. And, you know, we have this saying that you can destroy good asset allocation with bad fund selection. So if you can't find those good active managers, we'd never feel the pressure. We'd never force ourselves into an active fund for the sake of it. And in those situations, we're very happy to buy passive. You know, we don't want to add unnecessary volatility into the plan, and we'll sit there with that passive exposure as long as we think it's the best idea for that asset class.
Oliver, on the topic of investor behavior, have you seen clients sabotaging their own success by switching or panicking?
Yeah, it's the sort of fear and greed argument, you know, and we've seen it all. I think time is more important than timing. If you have a portfolio, you can drip feed into the market, or if, like Ollie was saying, if you're putting money every month in or every quarter into your portfolio, but not thinking about it and just investing it, you will smooth out the highs and lows. But it comes back to the point, really, that asset allocation is more important than passive and active fund selection, really, because if you get your asset allocation right, the rest will follow. It shouldn't be a detractor from performance, but it should follow. So it is important that clients are met at the beginning, understand exactly what the multitude of assets they're going to own is going to be and what they do. And then really, it's just leave it with the professional to put the money into the market when they feel the timing's right. And once the allocation's correct, you'll smooth out those peak and troughs that every portfolio manager sees. Just on that, I mean, as managers, you will enjoy the moment when the market does fall and you're holding cash because you can top it up. And conversely, if the market is an all-time high, which it is today, I'm assuming, again, for the US, you might want to top slice and take some profit and realign your portfolios at those inflection points. And with the Trump administration, we get those every 6 months. So it's been quite handy.
Yeah, all good points there. I'm going to take a slight diversion, if you like, but it's relevant to this. Passive has become such a huge part of the market, hasn't it? When you look at the amount of assets under management in passive funds, particularly in the US and increasingly in Europe. And I'm slightly puzzled. You know, as a portfolio manager for much of my career, I find myself wondering if everyone's moving to passive investing, then who's actually researching the stocks? You know, how is the price discovery working when we're all following the herd? And I'd be interested, really interested to hear your thoughts on that. I'm going to go with age over anything and start with you, Oliver, because you've obviously got a lot of experience, more than either of us, perhaps.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon that if you look at the market now, there's a wall of money that's piling into the market and they're buying every stock in the market. You know, inevitably, you're going to have to own all the stocks, even the bad ones. Yeah, even the ones that are underperforming, have terrible results, you're going to buy them. And in a way, it's made it harder for the active manager, really, because even the bad stocks are being supported by investment. Whereas if you were doing fundamental analysis and you were trying to pick your winners, you're also looking at the losers, the ones you want to outperform, and you're assuming they're going to go down. But if everyone keeps buying them through passives, the buggers stay up. So you've got this quite a difficult job, to be honest, to try and outperform a wall of money which is coming in. But you're absolutely right, Max. It's keeping some stocks probably higher than they should be, to be fair.
So these are the sort of questions that keep me awake at night. I don't know about you, but I haven't yet come up with an answer. But Ollie, I'm sure you've debated this with your colleagues at Portfolio Metrics.
Yeah, we talk about it a lot. I suppose the obvious answer is, you know, there's still plenty of active money in the market at the moment. I think, did we go through half in a market I saw recently? Over half the market is invested passively now, which is quite crazy to think about, really. You know, there's still plenty of active players in the market, a lot of systematic type investing now as well, hedge funds, fast money, chasing news. But, you know, when you actually think about it, it's impossible for the market to be entirely passive. There has to be active players in the market somewhere along the line, as you mentioned, for price discovery to take place. There's an element at the moment of, I suppose, performance chasing to an extent. If passive continues to outperform active managers, people are going to allocate more to passive funds. And what's interesting to Oliver's point about it supporting it, it's that marginal buyers continually on the passive side, but also the money's coming out of the active funds as well. So their positions aren't only being, it's not the positions that they don't own being rewarded, their positions are also being punished. So it's a very interesting place for the market to be, but I'm sure at some point we'll find that equilibrium. The market's always settle somewhere on what the right figure is. And we've got to be close to the bottom for fees in passive funds now, you know, but 2-3 basis points for US active funds. They've got to make money somewhere. US passive funds. People have got to make money somewhere. So It's an interesting space. It's an interesting time. And as you mentioned, the markets will turn. At some point, active will outperform again. And then I'm sure you'll start to see that money move away from passive funds and back into the active end of the market.
Yeah, because another way of sort of thinking about it is, I suppose in recent times, we've seen, particularly with the rise of technology, a small number of companies, one beginning with N, for example, it generated most of the market gains. And one wonders, is that an argument for active managers, in favor of active managers, to go and try and find these hidden gems and realize their potential? Or, as we said earlier, for passive investors, just to own everything, just in case?
There's a problem. So if I remember the likes of Nokia and, you know, the Finnish Finnish stock market being 60% of the market, and you're going to see that a lot of, and again, you know, it comes back to the fact that not all passive is going to be right in every region, but you will get that over-reliance on a certain stock or 10 stocks or five in one sector, which can dominate the entire index. And if you're out of them, you're going to underperform, but you might be wrong, but it's an expensive mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think on that, because again, it's something we've been looking at recently, and it's really interesting that how few, I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but how few smaller numbers of the market actually drive most of the return. And it's actually interesting how, was it like 50% or something, have actually generated no return for the market, which is an even more frightening stat. But it sort of, to an extent, does lean into that if you are invested passively, you know, you will have exposure to those companies that dominate returns. And that is something that you do want to have. But the other thing that we've done some research into recently, which is quite interesting, is sort of looking at those turning points, you know, when the old, when the current top 10 becomes the old top 10, or when Japan peaked as a proportion of equity and now it's fallen all the way down to 5-6%. What's really interesting is the market still typically moves upwards, even though market leadership changes, be it at a regional level, be it at a top 10 level. It doesn't really affect the overall direction of market, just because, yes, today's winners aren't tomorrow's winners. The market as a whole still grinds upwards and still continues to deliver, I suppose, even real returns through these periods. So again, just, you know, another reason perhaps not to be scared, I suppose, of the market concentration we have at the moment. You know, we've seen it before in other aspects, and the market does continue to move higher even when you see that change of leadership.
We've had some interesting discussions on the concepts, if you like, but let's turn to some of the sort of practical matters, if you like. And I appreciate my next question could be a cue to talk for another half hour, so keep it brief, obviously, just any snippets that are relevant. But I mean, both your firms are managing portfolios on behalf of clients, so you can select from the whole of the market if you wish. But in practice, how do you construct a portfolio to reflect the best of both passive and active when your mandate permits?
Basically, we do have an MPS, a model portfolio service. So that'll be the sort of basis for discussion on a monthly basis. So you'll look at the portfolio and we populate those areas of the market. So let's say emerging markets, for instance, in Asia, with active managers, but we'll have a passive manager in the US and possibly globally, because a few of the big global managers have come a bit unstuck over the last few years. So we have drifted more towards passive in the larger parts of the equity portfolio, to be fair. But then that's just one part of the multi-asset. You know, there are other areas like fund of hedge funds, commodities, and private equity. So I think it's really going to be horses for courses again. I think there's definitely, for the larger equity parts of the portfolio, it'll be passive, and then active, perhaps on the smaller parts where we've seen or found the managers to do the job. And also on those markets which are slightly more difficult to track, like Japan. They have had issues there as well with the size of some of the companies. So, you know, again, we've had some success in that area as well.
To Oliver's point earlier, you know, asset allocation is ultimately the first and foremost and biggest driver of portfolio outcomes. So, you know, we spend an awful lot of time making sure we get the right asset allocation for each of the various risk levels that we run for clients. From there, more to the point of this conversation, you know, how do we implement the different asset classes that we have in portfolios? And, you know, as I've already mentioned, you know, we're very happy to invest passively if we think that's right. It's a great starting point, it's low cost, and it provides you with that beta exposure to that market. So while that's a great starting point, you know, we do like active funds. We do use active funds in our solutions. And there we spend a lot of time thinking about where active funds have performed well and using that as a guiding light for where we'd like to spend our active risk budget. So to refer back to previous parts of the conversation, you know, small caps, we do have allocations to active small cap managers across a lot of equity regions. Within high yield, we've already mentioned emerging market debt, we use active managers there. And then in your more larger cap areas as well, you know, emerging markets, we have a little bit more active and perhaps in credit as well. So it's really that focus on, you know, where do we have the highest probability of success within the portfolios of choosing successful managers, and then focusing on those parts of the market and hopefully then identifying those managers that give us that exposure and are going to successfully and consistently deliver us alpha through time.
Great, thank you. Gosh, we seem to have got through an awful lot in our time, and I'm coming up towards the end of our session. And we're obviously talking to private individuals who are listening to this. Some are perhaps thinking of starting their investment journey, others perhaps a bit more experienced. But I would always recommend that clients take independent financial advice. I'm sure we all agree on that. But invariably, some will have chosen to invest on their own. Is there anything, any sort of remarks that you might say to a DIY investor when it comes to passive or active? Oliver.
Yeah, it's a good one. What tends to happen is that clients will maybe find a stock or, you know, a particular holding they've heard about, and they want you to buy some, which is fine if we discuss it. And if it's a good or terrible idea, we'll have that as discussion. But be mindful, if you get it wrong, you've doubled down on yourself. So you have to check yourself a bit on those. But I think for the DIY investor, I think the passive part of the market is probably the place to be, because you're probably not going to be able to research the 10,000 funds that are available and narrow it down to 20. It's hard enough doing it as a firm. And I think if you'd also benefit from the fees. So in that environment, you know, a global index, global equity index would suit quite nicely, I suspect.
Ollie, you're not going to disagree with that, I imagine. Over the long term, we're all better off invested in a passive fund than not, aren't we?
Absolutely. I don't have too much to add on top of what Oliver said there. You know, ultimately, if you are insistent on doing it yourself and not seeking out advice, you know, simplicity, low cost are really some good guiding principles of doing that. And that does lead itself very nicely into, yeah, global index funds, global bond funds, and just getting that market exposure and being invested over the long term.
Well, I think you've given some good closing comments to our listeners. Oliver, is there anything else you might want to add that either I haven't asked or we haven't covered that's relevant on this topic?
Yeah, I think the market is always evolving. You know, at the moment, it has been a switch across to passives from actives, but I think it will continue to change, and you'll get new managers coming in who may be able to outperform or impress us with their numbers coming up. So it's always something to keep a good eye on. And obviously, we're competing investment houses with other people. So I think as an edge in investment house, you've got to keep your eye out for good new talent that enters the market.
It's been a fascinating discussion. What I'm taking away from this is not a binary argument at all. It's far more nuanced. And there are always times when you will want to be invested with an active fund, and there'll be some times when you just want to ride the wave. So it just remains for me to thank our two guests, Oliver Jones from Portfolio Metrics, Oliver Pearson-Lund from Peregrine Black Investment Management. Gentlemen, thank you both very much indeed. And that's it for this time. Please join us again. Please subscribe to the Eclipse Wealth podcast. And we look forward to joining you again with two more professional guests. Until then, goodbye.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Max. Thanks, Oliver.
Thanks, Ollie.
Speak soon.
Speak soon.
If you enjoyed listening to this section of the Client Journey series, then why not subscribe and listen to past and future episodes? You can find out more on our website at www.eclipsewealth.co.uk/podcast. Eclipse Private Office is a trading style of Peregrine and Black Investment Management Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority here in the UK. Please remember that this podcast is for educational and information purposes only. We are not advising whether a certain investment is suitable or not. Don't forget that the value of investments can go down as well as up, and past performance of an investment is not a predictor of future returns. However, if you are interested in discussing any of the topics raised, then please contact Peregrine and Black via our website to arrange to speak with an independent financial advisor. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to join us next time for more conversation along the client journey.